It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
Well, hello, everybody. It is Sunday night. It is episode 172. It is Ron and Brian, and now broadcasting in full 5G Fauci vision. We had said to you over the past month, the new vaccine mandate that we were having for all of our listeners and viewers, a mandate which we may add Joe Biden seems to have stolen over the past week, but that's all right, Joe. We'll give you that one. But yes, so now we are up and running. People had been questioning up until this point, how would we know if people were vaccinated? And we were kind of evasive, but we are comfortable now that a number of you have gotten the shots. We are comfortable in telling you that the great thing about the 5G Fauci vision is that it can read the microchip that was included in your vaccine shot, whether you got the Johnson & Johnson shot, the Pfizer shot, or the Moderna shot.
The gold standard.
So as long as you have not cut the microchip out of your arm, the Fauci vision picks up on that and you should have no issues listening or viewing this program. Brian, are you excited to be broadcasting in full 5G Fauci vision?
Excited is just part of the emotions that are flowing through my veins. There's excitement. There is safety. I'm feeling like I'm in a cocoon, as I know that I'm currently being surrounded by fully vaccinated individuals. I thank you to Tony, as his friends like to call him, Tony Fauci, for creating Fauci Vision, because we now know right now that anybody that is not vaccinated is unable to absorb the visuals and the audios of this podcast. I feel that our future is very bright, Ron.
For those of you who are vaccinated, wondering what the non-vaccinated folks are seeing right now, it is very it's very similar to kind of the scrambled porn back in the 90s on the cable box. So they're just seeing a lot of, you know, they may make out Brian's feet at some point. They may make out my bouffant in between the squiggly lines. But yeah, and a lot of static in the vocals. So kudos to everybody for being vaccinated and being here with us tonight. In the meantime, it's time to put something else into our body. It's Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Na zdrowie.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week. Drink
All
of the
right,
week.
Brian. I've noticed a few glasses, cans, dishes there. What are you drinking tonight?
From our good friends over at Mayflower Brewing, you are looking at South Island Squeeze IPL. Not IPA, IPL.
Huh.
What you're looking at here, if I don't spill it, you are looking at the South Island Squeeze IPL, which is a 7% ABV India Pale Lager brewed with lager malt. Now, it's lagered for 6 weeks as the beer pours bright with a nice head.
Take a sip. How is it?
I would say that there's a slight enjoyable sweetness to it.
Okay, what else? What else can you tell us?
But throughout, there's a smooth lager finish. I believe that this beer tastes like it was dry hopped with three different New Zealand ground hops, which are then drawn into the finished beer, which has a light cracker aroma as a base, complemented with lime, pine, rosemary, lychee, and Smarties candy.
Smarties candy. Wow, that is a complex flavor profile. Are you a fan?
It tastes like a fruity beer. The fruit is subtle. It's not overpowering. I will definitely drink the second can.
All right. Very good. Very good.
Ron?
Yes.
What are you drinking?
So last week I took some heat. As we know, I broke out my first pumpkin beer of the fall.
Yes.
Labeled as basic. Really took beating on social media. So I decided to humble myself and go back to my roots of Pennsylvania beers. This one from Trogues. This is their Haze Charmer. This is a dry hopped hazy pale ale.
Okay.
The hops Citra, Idaho 7, and Azaka. The grains are pale malt, oats, and unmalted wheat. And this clocks in at a 5.5%. A little hazy looking, not as hazy.
A little hazy.
It's a little bit.
I can still see the bouffant from the from behind the can.
Ooh, that is hazy.
Ah, Senor Ron likes his beverage this week. That and this is what happens, Ron. When you're not basic, when you sit there and say, no, I'm not drinking pumpkin, you get a good beer.
I explore a bit, and that, you know, I needed to get a bit out of my comfort zone. And again, we're all doing new things today. We're vaccinated. We got Fauci vision going, and I've got a new non-pumpkin beer. Good stuff. Very good stuff. So we will be drinking those the remainder of the show. Hopefully you all are enjoying a beverage as well. One thing that none of us enjoy is This Week in Racism.
This week in
Racism.
So we've got a couple pages of racism again this week. But again, I think we can keep it to under 10 minutes, which I know you like, Brian. So we will get the clock rolling on This Week in Racism starting now. Twitch has filed a legal complaint against two users for flooding the chats of Black, queer, and disabled streamers with racist, sexist, and homophobic language. The two users, referred to in the suit by their handles Cruise Control and Creatine Overdose, are accused of repeatedly evading bans on Twitch by creating new accounts and, quote, seriously harmed and will continue to harm the Twitch community. A new study finds that Black offenders are much more likely than white or Hispanic ones to get federal life sentences. The analysis published in the journal Criminology examined more than 366,000 offenders convicted and sentenced in 90 federal district courts from 2010 to 2017. Of that group of people, researchers found that Black offenders accounted for fewer than a third of all cases, but made up nearly half of those eligible for life behind federal bars. Comparatively, white offenders accounted for more than a third of all cases, but made up less than a quarter of those eligible to serve life sentences. Additionally, Hispanic offenders were more likely to be eligible for life sentences than white offenders, but were half as likely as Black offenders to get handed life sentences. A new study finds that Black kids in California were more likely to visit the hospital in connection with injuries caused by law enforcement. Researchers found that almost 16,000 kids were treated for injuries between 2005 and 2017. Of that number, Black youth topped the list. Black boys between the age of 15 to 19 years old had the highest rate, experiencing 143.2 additional injuries per 100,000 person years compared with white boys of the same age. Compared with white girls age 15 to 19 years, Black girls of the same age experienced 4.3 times the injury rate. Relative inequities between Black and white youth were even greater amongst those aged 10 to 14. Black boys had 5.3 times the injury rate of white boys, and Black girls experienced 6.7 times the injury rate of white girls. WF Corporation announced that board member Veronica Wu would be stepping down after an email of her dismissing racism and calling Black Lives Matter activists the true racist was publicly released last week. In the email, Wu wrote, "If we judge racism by requiring every job has to be based on a racial proportion versus merits, then NBA should not have so many Black players. I don't see people complaining about that." Wu then continues to write, "I don't believe in Black Lives Matter. If anything, I think they are the true racists trying to stir up things to make this country going to socialism or even communism, potentially." Wu's email was not the first time she expressed similar comments. A former coworker alleges she would say, quote, "The reason you don't see African Americans in tech is because they're lazy and don't work." A Danvers, Massachusetts-based farm has apologized to a black couple after staffers called the police on them for allegedly stealing six apples. Manica Bowman and Jeff Myers visited the farm on Labor Day and spent $100 on food and apple picking for the day. At one point, they noticed their children picked a few extra apples that didn't fit in the designated bag they purchased. Bowman and Myers put the additional apples in their child's stroller and intended to pay for them at the farm store before leaving. A security guard instead searched her purse and that the manager called police when the couple demanded the farm owner's contact information. The responding officer, the couple added, accused them of, quote, playing the race card. And a white Colorado truck driver was sentenced to 16 years in federal prison and 5 years of supervised release for a hate crime after repeatedly stabbing a black man in the neck. In December 2019, Nolan Strauss ambushed Ronnell Hughes, a black man who was applying for a job in Arby's at an Oregon truck stop. According to the prosecutor's sentencing memo, Strauss had told police that he had a misunderstanding in his head, that he kind of lost control, and that he had a, quote, problem with black people. Strauss.
What?
Yes.
He had a misunderstanding in his head?
Yeah, he was off his meds, apparently, that day.
Okay.
But he did plead guilty to a federal hate crime involving an attempt to kill. We also have a few stories in Racism Rewind.
Racism Rewind.
The Texas chapter of the NAACP, along with the Civil Rights Organization's University of Texas at Austin chapter and a group of anonymous students, has filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, alleging UT Austin is creating a hostile environment for black students by continuing to play the Eyes of Texas alma mater song at university events. The complaint alleges that black students have been denied full benefits of Longhorn student life because the song is an official part of the university, quote, despite its racially offensive origin, context, and meaning. The song premiered at a minstrel show in the early 1900s where students likely wore blackface.
Well, I didn't know that.
Despite pushback, university officials have said they are going to keep the song as their alma mater, concluding in a report issued earlier this year that the song had no racial intent. This will shock you, Brian. This is cops clearing cops in an investigation.
What?
An internal investigation into the Louisiana State Police has concluded that Lieutenant John Clary, an officer accused of hiding body camera footage in the brutal beating and death of black motorist Ronald Green, will not be disciplined or charged. In a statement from the state police spokesman, the administrative investigation determined that there was no evidence that proved or disproved the allegations that Clary lied about the footage or purposely hit it. And finally, Alabama lawmakers are working to cut racist language from its state constitution dating back to 1901, when maintaining white supremacy was explicitly the law of the state. Working to correct this is the Committee on the Recompilation of the Constitution, which was set in motion by voters back in 2020. This committee will work to erase the remnants of Jim Crow laws governing segregated schools, poll taxes, and other racist measures that were ruled unconstitutional in the 1950s and 1960s by federal courts. The changes could be made by next year, and voters will have to vote to accept them in 2022. And Brian, that is This Week in Racism.
Not as painful.
No?
As it has been in the past. Not as painful.
It can be horrible at times.
Well, I think it's always horrible. I don't think there's ever been a week where you've gone through your stories and I sat there and said, oh, that didn't seem bad at all. In fact, I'm quite proud that, you know, not at all. Each week is bad. This one just wasn't as bad as it has in the past.
All right. And I kept another 10 minutes, which I know you like. There we go. 6 minutes, 39 seconds. See, you talk to me, you ask a request of me, and I deliver, Brian. I think you should be happy.
Ron, you deliver each and every week.
No, you're too good to me. All right, let's keep it rolling here with Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's your beef this week?
I had a beef all lined up.
Okay.
I had a beef all lined up. It was going to be a situation that happened with me earlier this week where a friend, a close friend of mine, who I had invited to attend the concert with me earlier this year, purchased tickets to go see the same band play New York City, and then made it very clear to me that if I wanted to go see this band, that I should go buy my own tickets. And it hurt. But that is not my beef.
Okay. All right.
It's not my beef this week.
Not your beef. That one is not your beef. Could have been your beef. Would have been understanding if it was your beef. I personally feel that's a very valid beef. But tell me what trumped that to be your actual beef of the week.
Yesterday morning, I woke up. We are recording this on the evening of Sunday, September 12th. Yesterday was September 11th, my mother's birthday. Cheers, DP, up there. So I wake up, I make my coffee, I sit down, I take out my laptop, I get on social media, and it is flooded with everybody's personal stories about where they were and what they did on 9/11.
And you took issue with that.
I took issue with people trying to make the dialogue about 9/11 about them and their experience, when in most cases they were not involved or affected personally by what took place that day. I saw, if it was a lost family member, if it was somebody that was on one of the planes, one of the first responders, the brave police officers and firefighters and EMTs who went into the towers here, who went into the Pentagon. There were a lot of people who should be remembered because of what took place on 9/11. And it shouldn't be that on 9/11, instead of spending the mental energy on remembering those people, there are so many people who went online yesterday to talk about how they were at their desk in Midtown Manhattan and they heard that something had happened downtown, and then somebody turned the TV on and, you know, they saw what it was and how they went home and how they weren't able to go back to work for a couple of weeks because of the, you know, the effect of the air and blah, blah, blah. That's 9/11. That's not what we should be remembering on 9/11. And that bothered me, was just people who were making it about them. For me.
Fair enough.
It really irked me. And you can sit there and say, you know what, Brian, 9/11 was about more than just people dying. It was about how it affected everybody's lives. You can say that to me, but my beef of the week are people who are trying to make 9/11 about them.
All right. Well, we'll see how you appreciate my beef of the week then. So my beef of the week is with the Associated Press, Brian. More specifically,
their, the media. You're their, going after the fake media.
Their AP Planner Twitter account, which will regularly tweet out notable dates and anniversaries. So on Friday, they put out a tweet regarding a 20th anniversary on September 11th. And that 20th anniversary, the release of the Nickelback album, Silver Side Up.
No.
Not surprisingly, the tweet did not go over well. And they would go on to delete that later on Saturday. But there's a level of stupidity there that
yes.
I don't know how to even comment, but I think to your point, there are some people that will try and make 9/11 about themselves in a way,
sure,
which is bad enough. But to know that it's the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and be like, well, wait, let's not also forget this Nickelback album is also 20 years old, and could equally be considered as tragic as the events of 9/11.
I think our Twitter account, I don't know whether it was you or Matt that posted it, But you made a comment about how one of the highlights of your year is the corporations that have to apologize for insensitive tweets on 9/11.
Yeah.
And I was just said, you know what? Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
It is. Yeah, it's just something that happens. And well, I mean, I guess that just really does lead us in to the fact that yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Brian, tell me how you, not to make it about you, but tell me what you did yesterday to really honor the Patriots we lost 20 years ago.
Well, as you know, Ron, I am a New Yorker. It's going to be hard for me to talk about this. I'm just
understood. I get it.
If I break down at any point, I went out to Reading, Pennsylvania to go see the band Clutch.
Really? You went to a Clutch concert. All right. Well,
went to a Clutch concert. The goal was on the, every 5 years, I like to go out to Shanksville, PA.
Okay. Good. Good.
Was that close?
No, you nailed the name of the city, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, so I go out to Shanksville once a year, every 5 years, to remember the people that were on that plane, Todd Beamer, somebody else. Anywho, but it's just that's what I like to do.
Okay, fair enough.
And instead of making it all the way to Shanksville, I decided to stop off at Reverb with one of my favorite bands was playing, and I saw Clutch. Ron, what did you do on 9/11?
You know, I went to a flea market down at Laurel Hill Cemetery, a funky little spot here in Philadelphia, and then went to a brewery and had a couple of beers and some dinner. Very low key, Brian. Kept it very low key.
You went to a cemetery?
Yeah. It was the market of the macabre, Brian. It's an annual event here in Philly. If you've never been to Laurel,
is it always on 9/11?
It is not. It's always the second weekend in September. So on occasion, it does, you know, tend to fall on that. If you don't think
it's a little tone deaf that on 9/11 they are instead of remembering those that died, they're like, hey, let's just do a walking tour of a local cemetery.
Listen, it's all about not letting the terrorists win, Brian.
Okay.
And actually, if you saw the movie Rocky Balboa, where spoiler alert, Adrian dies and is buried, and Rocky visits her grave, that was shot in Laurel Hill Cemetery.
Adrian dies?
Yes, in Rocky Balboa.
I didn't know that.
Oh, well, I hope I didn't ruin it for you. You'll forget about it by the time you watch the movie, I'm sure.
Probably won't ever watch it. Okay.
But yeah, so 20th anniversary. I did not watch anything on TV about the actual
ceremony. I watched quite a bit of the ceremony that they had last year because of the social distancing rules that were in effect. They did not have the annual reading of the names in Lower Manhattan of people that died on 9/11. This year they did. I will say this, it really is a matter of time as watching it. It's a matter of what letter are they in when you stand up and say to yourself, God, this is so fucking morbid, and then walk out of the room. Yeah. I got through to the G's. They were in the late G's when I stood up and said, I can't do this anymore. And I had to walk away.
Yeah. And this is a year I learned. So a friend of mine, she got married to this guy a few years back. Nice guy. So we
congratulations.
And, you know, I had known that his father had passed away on 9/11. I did not know what the situation was. I think everybody just makes the natural assumption that, you know, he was in the World Trade Center, but he was actually a passenger on flight 11, which was the flight that hit the first tower. So I don't know. That puts it just very difficult to wrap your brain around having to deal with, you know, losing a loved one in that way. I don't even think I
sure can. Well, no, I mean the worst part is just I imagine just having to watch on TV over and over again watching the plane slam into a building, knowing that your family member was on that plane.
Yeah. That because again, I mean, you know, having a family member die in some sort of tragedy, like a car crash or something like that, is bad.
Sure.
But you literally have a situation where it's being replayed every single year.
Yes.
And probably yes. will be for the rest of your life.
Probably. Yeah. No, that's got to be very difficult. My thoughts and prayers go out to that family.
I did. There were a couple of documentaries, newer ones this year. So I caught on Hulu 9/11, One Day in America, which was a National Geographic documentary done in conjunction with the 9/11 Museum there in New York City. So just I don't know that there was anything. There was some new footage, some new interviews. I don't know that there was too much there. But the interesting one I watched was on Netflix. It's called Turning Point, 9/11 and the War on Terror. And what was interesting about this is obviously 9/11 and the attacks were kind of the primary storyline. But it also in the beginning kind of jumps back to the war in Afghanistan when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan initially and when they pulled out and how, you know, that really destabilized the country and allowed, you know, kind of these terrorist cells to grow within Afghanistan and then eventually, you know, harbor Osama bin Laden and the hijackers. And then, you know, showing what happened afterwards with us as a country. And it was it's very interesting to see kind of the parallels of what went on post 9/11 and what people are concerned with kind of post COVID. Like everyone's all concerned about government overreach right now with mask mandates and everything else. But when you watch this documentary and you look at the power that was given to the president by Congress to sure. go to war, and then you look at the powers that were given to the NSA and the FBI, CIA, in the wake of that. And, you know, a lot of people are under the mistaken impression that that was just a 9/11 thing. Like, all right, we'll have these laws in place and we'll deal with who attacked us in 9/11. If anything, they've just been strengthened over the years.
Sure. Sure. Been
strengthened by the Obama administration. They were strengthened by the Trump administration. So for people to be looking at what's going on now and thinking the government is overreaching, like the government's been overreaching for the last 20 years.
Government has always been overreaching. I think the lesson here is that the government inherently, our government will slide towards authoritarianism given any opportunity. 9/11 was an incredible opportunity for government to take on more controls, to cut back on freedom. And what I find interesting, I think I'm just repeating you, but you've got so many people now who are screaming about their freedoms and they're protesting in the streets. But when there was a Republican president, they seem to have absolutely no problem having to take off their shoes to go through airport security. Right. As a nation, I don't see anybody, throwing a total meltdown because they have to go through a metal detector at the airport. And yet during those days, it's very well known the government was collecting every email that is written. The government is collecting every phone call, from the telecommunications providers. Mm-hmm. And there was almost no backlash for it. Outside of the government, little geek world that I pride myself to be a member of. But suddenly, because there's a vaccine that for a disease that will cut down on your likelihood of needing to be hospitalized if you get it, that's where suddenly people now seem to have a problem.
Well, and people are actually thinking that the government's trying to slip a microchip into your body via vaccine. To your point, with the surveillance that was implemented post 9/11, they don't need to do that. They know everything about you. If you want to be freaked out, Google an NSA program called Stellar Wind. that went into effect after 9/11. And like you said, it collected metadata on
metadata,
Jerry, on just pretty much every phone conversation out there.
Yeah.
And what was also crazy in listening to this documentary, like there were people in the Department of Justice, when it would come up time for some of these things to be reviewed, you know, there were actually some lawyers that were like, no, half of Stellar Wind is unconstitutional and shouldn't be continued. And John Ashcroft surprisingly agreed with that lawyer's assessment. And there was a point in the documentary where John Ashcroft has had like major emergency surgery and is in the ICU, and Alberto Gonzalez and somebody else are literally going into his ICU room trying to get
pen
him
to paper.
Provide this lawyer. Yes. But again, this is stuff that's been going on for 20 years, and you know, but no one's been questioning it. It just gets
real. Nobody cares.
Nobody
cares about it. I just find it really ironic, especially now that we're talking about 9/11, is all of the abuse of power that the government is during the Bush administration conducted, seemingly to almost no resistance amongst American people.
And what also struck me, and it kind of saddened me to a bit, is, you know, we lost, what, almost 3,000 people? I think 2,977, 343 sure. firefighters, 60 police officers, the largest amount of first responder deaths in one day in U.S. history. And
a partridge in the pear tree.
And the day after, you know, there was a sense of unity in this country that we hadn't had
before. Sure.
And everyone just kind of banded together. And to your point, like when flights started happening again and we had to take off our shoes and our belts and we couldn't carry on more than 3 ounces of liquid and everything else, like people did it. They did it because, you know, we had been attacked and our fellow countrymen had been killed. And now, you know, 20 years later, as of yesterday, we've got over 660,000 people mm-hmm. dead due to COVID-19. And people are still going to argue about whether people should be forced to wear a mask or
correct.
Get a vaccine or my rights. I need my rights. It's just sad to see how far this country's fallen apart in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's real sad.
That's one of the things that really hit home and just depressed me a lot.
Did you watch the Spike Lee documentary?
I did not. Did you?
Me neither. I started watching it. I wanted to see what his take on 9/11 was. I know that there was some controversy with some of the comments he made embracing some of the conspiracy theories in line with 9/11. And I turned it on and I watched the first 20 minutes of the first episode, and they're all talking about the coronavirus pandemic. And I understand that he was trying to do a, you know, 9/11 to coronavirus kind of a link, I guess, the way that, like, you know, New York is the, you know, this town that is so tough, nothing can bring us down. And I just was like, I just lived this. Why am I watching an hour long special about it? So I turned it off, gave up.
I did start to watch prior to doing this. I'll have to get back to it. I started watching the movie Worth on Netflix with Michael Keaton. And that is the story of the law firm and the lawyer that basically had to put together the formula that determined payouts for those people, for the families of the victims of 9/11.
Sure.
And that was a whole thing that I really had forgotten all about was, you know, one of the first things to come out of that was the airline industry panicking that they're bankrupted by lawsuits because of this, and going to Congress. And, you know, they don't refer to it as a bailout, but at the end of the day, it was an industry bailout. And it was still to this day is the largest bailout that the U.S. government has done for any industry in this country's history.
The amount of money that the government gave the airline industry in 2001 and 2002, because people were afraid to fly, to subsidize the existence of these companies. Once again, you know, it's I can go on a rant, but Congress loves corporations that can afford to have lots of lobbyists. It is just an outrage. It's a fucking outrage.
So speaking of COVID, of course, it continues. And of course, we still have stories to talk about. First is a Rutgers student who said he's being barred from taking classes even because he hasn't been vaccinated, even though he is only studying virtually from home. This is Logan Holler. He apparently ignored his school's COVID mandate because all of his classes are remote because he's at home. He's 70 miles away from the Rutgers campus in New Brunswick, but he was locked out of his Rutgers email and related accounts when he went to pay his tuition last month and was told that he needed to be vaccinated, even though he has no plans to attend in person.
That sounds ridiculous to me. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, again, I want everyone to go out and get vaccinated. But sure, the logic behind this doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, it doesn't. And I get it. The idea is just that if they let him stay, but he is considered a full-time student, so he should be able to go on campus at all times. I understand there's logic there, but it just doesn't make sense in this case.
Right. And I think that's the university stance is, you know, if you're taking classes online, you still will have an active student ID. You could still be on campus, and we don't have a way to not keep you from being on campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it. I was going to say for each one of these cases where it's where you get a mandate where the rules of it are being enforced seem not in line with common sense, there are so many more where it is based in common sense and it does completely work.
Right. And again, at the end of the day, go get vaccinated and it's not an issue.
Sure. Why not?
Sure. Unless, of course, the only option you have is to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which, you know, as we've discussed, we can understand why you might be hesitant on that. Apparently, and I didn't even realize this, in talking about the Biden administration's plan for coronavirus booster shots, Johnson & Johnson still is not covered under that booster plan that was announced back on August 18th. People are being focused on first the Pfizer and the Moderna shots. Thoughts, Brian? Should the Johnson & Johnson folks be concerned? Should they be going out and trying to get the Moderna vaccine now?
Yes. Well, first off, I think that you have to listen to the scientists. Is there any effect? Because Moderna and Johnson & Johnson are using two very different types of vaccine. Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a one-shot only, provides somewhere in the mid-60s in terms of its effective rate, whereas Moderna,
the gold standard,
is offering something in the mid to high 90s in terms of effective rate, but you are required two shots. It's using different types of technology. So I don't know if it's safe for somebody who has been received a shot of the Johnson & Johnson suddenly going out and getting Moderna. I know for sure that if I was somebody who had received Johnson & Johnson, I would have gone out as quickly as possible, claimed that I needed to have Moderna.
The gold standard.
In my blood.
Understood. And Moderna continuing to knock it out of the park when it comes to vaccines. They made an announcement earlier this week that they are going to be coming up with a combination COVID and flu booster, a one-dose shot. Again, their COVID vaccine is already more effective against the Delta variant than Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, or Joe Rogan. And now they will combine it with the flu shot. So again, one shot, bing, bang, boom, you're done for a year.
How amazing is Moderna?
Now, unfortunately, it probably will, the gold standard, it will take them a little over a year to get this together. And also Norvavax, is also looking at a similar vaccine as well. But again, we've had such success with Moderna.
The gold standard.
Then why even bother with another company?
What is Norvavax?
Norvavax, again, it's another pharmaceutical company. I don't know where they're based out of, but they're in Gaithersburg, Maryland. They are also in the process of putting together a vaccine, a COVID vaccine and flu booster shot.
Okay.
They're no Moderna, my friends. They are no Moderna.
No.
The gold standard.
Also, in entertainment news, comedian Patton Oswalt canceled shows in Florida and Utah after venues failed to comply with his COVID request. He had asked all attendees to his upcoming tour dates in Florida and Salt Lake City that all attendees either show proof of full vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test. Unfortunately, his venues, he had 4 dates in December in Florida and 1 in Salt Lake City in 2022. Those venues would not agree with his guidelines, so he pulled out and he canceled those shows.
Now, that's someone that is leading by example.
Yes.
And I don't want to say leading. That's a misleading term. Ron and Brian were the first performers to announce that we would only perform in front of a fully vaccinated a crowd. This was announced a little bit over a month ago, I believe. We are now, as you can see below, we are broadcasting in full 5G Fauci vision. Kudos to Patton Oswalt. I think, you know, after seeing the stance that the Ron and Brian podcast took, that it is clear that this is the direction of entertainment. People need to feel safe. People need to be smart. People need the Ron and Brian podcast.
And if this is true, Billy is saying Jim Brewer is canceling shows where there are vaccine mandates. And unfortunately, it looks like this is true. He posted a video to his social media. He canceled shows, including one at the Wellmont Theater in Mount Clair, New Jersey, on December 3rd over their policies allowing only those who have been vaccinated or recently tested negative for COVID-19 to attend.
Okay. That's his business.
Royal Oak Theater in Michigan canceled. But this is the thing. He says, I have to stick to my morals. I have to stick to what I know is right.
Which is what?
I guess the freedom to harm yourself and other human beings.
And your fan base. This is craziness.
That's a bummer. I'm a Brewer fan, but that is I got to disagree with him on that.
He is a little high energy for me.
A little bit.
I mean, I know he's got the whole stoner persona. But he's just a little too high maintenance for me.
All right, that's fair. And then our last COVID story this week, the state of Pennsylvania now going after some Pennsylvania physicians who are just offering stock doctor's notes for parents looking to have their children exempted from wearing masks in schools. A statewide universal mask mandate in Pennsylvania went into effect on Tuesday as the WOF administration is trying to keep school buildings open amongst the latest surge in COVID-19 cases. But there are some doctors, shockingly, who are anti-mask for kids, one of which actually put a stock 4-page exemption letter on the homepage of his practice's website, inviting people to print your own copy. This is Dr. Joel Yeager in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania. His form letter dated September 6th claimed that wearing a mask can cause health problems and asserted that parents are exercising their constitutionally protected right in claiming this exception/exemption. Pennsylvania is going after these doctors. I'm sure they are going to try and suspend licenses and go after them. And Kudos to some schools who are not accepting them. Leechburg Area School District is one. Tiffany Nix, the superintendent, confirmed that they are rejecting stock exemption letters. They're still making the kids wear a mask. You would actually need appropriate medical documentation, not a a photocopy of a form off of a website.
I think that's okay.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
I mean, again, just wear the damn mask. I mean, the kids, you know, they don't have the receptors. I get that.
But I think that was proven false. I think I think it was proven false. I think the definition of what a kid is has been changed so that now it's basically only people from like 0 to 3 are considered kids who don't have the receptors. But you've got children 3 and up who are getting sick, becoming symptomatic, and some requiring hospitalization.
I mean, let's face it. If you look at those on the right, the kids only should be protected when they're in the womb. And then once they're out, fuck them.
God decides. I think that it's been their approach is that God will decide if they live or die. So, why not help speed that process along?
Let us jump down to South Carolina. Brian, you are fascinated by the story of lawyer Adam Murdaugh and his
yes.
family and the saga that has been going on there this year.
Do we have a photo of the Murdaugh family?
I can see if I can pull that up.
Please pull it up because I believe that the Murdaugh family, and you should be able to get it from one of the articles that we put on the Google Doc. So there is a family in South Carolina. I forgot what county it is, but it is a very well-connected, wealthy family. The father is a high-ranking lawyer in this small county. His father was a criminal judge. His other father, it's possibly had two fathers, but considering South Carolina in the 50s, unlikely. So that is Alex Murdaugh on the right that you're looking at. His wife, lovely woman, I heard she made an amazing peach cobbler. Mm. On the left, his younger son, I don't know the name because I did not do the research. Anywho, so a couple of years ago, the younger son, who was reported to have had a terrible anger issue, was allegedly driving a boat with 3 other people on the boat. Allegedly, he was drinking.
Allegedly.
When the boat struck a pier, causing the other inhabitants of the boat to fall off and drown in the lake.
Not good.
He was not arrested for this. He was not charged for anything, and he was not tried for anything. I would say maybe 2 or 3 months ago, the father comes home to their estate, which in South Carolina is probably, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, and finds that the son has been killed with a shotgun, finds the mother has been shot to death, calls 911, and the whole state is now up in arms as to what possibly could have happened. Was this a case of a drug deal gone bad? Was this a case of a family member seeking revenge on this kid for murdering one of during the boat accident several years ago? So we all are sitting there with bated breath. We're all sitting there waiting for the Investigative Discovery 2-hour documentary telling us exactly what's going on here. When earlier this week, Alex Murdaugh on the right calls 911 saying that he's been shot in the head.
Crazy.
And that he needs medical help. Originally, the police report said that there was no visible wound on his head, despite transporting him to the hospital. However, that was later updated to show that indeed there was an entry and an exit wound in his head from being shot. His lawyer I think on Friday, spoke to the press and confirmed that this was not a self-inflicted gun wound.
Now, Brian, I'm also reading that there are rumors that Alex Murdaugh had an argument regarding Foo Fighters tickets earlier that day. Have you heard anything about that?
I've not heard anything. I know the Foo Fighters are an amazing band, one of the best live acts around today. Anybody would just be absolutely lucky to have the opportunity to go see them live. If you ever find yourself in a position where you are holding two tickets to the Foo Fighters, I want you to find somebody that means a lot to you and offer them the other ticket, and then go with them and spend an amazing day.
All right. Very nice. As you know, many of you who follow the Ron and Brian podcast, we are animal lovers. That's why this next story is a little bit painful. It is about Caesar Milan, the dog whisperer. Apparently, his pit bull killed Queen Latifah's dog, and he allegedly tried to cover it up. This is a lawsuit that came out. It's a woman by the name of Lydia Matisse, claiming in 2017 she went to her mom's office building in Van Nuys, which is owned by Caesar. She was visiting her mother, who worked for Caesar at the time, and then his pit bull Junior attacked her, repeatedly biting her on the legs. And then she was supposed to be she was a star gymnast. That apparently derailed her career. Queen Latifah brought two of her dogs to Caesar's Dog Psychology Center in Santa Clarita. Apparently, Junior mauled one of her dogs to death. And Lydia claimed Caesar covered it up by telling staff to tell Queen Latifah the dog was hit and killed by a car.
Wow. That's not the Caesar Milan that I know.
No. So Caesar has filed an answer to the lawsuit, claiming, amongst other things, that Lydia assumed the risk of being bitten because she knew the danger, I guess, of coming around Caesar Milan. And he also claims Lydia herself was negligent, but he does not say how. So this lawsuit.
Well, maybe he is a piece of garbage.
He very well could be. He always had a little bit of an attitude. A little bit. This story, kind of sad, kind of makes you scratch your head. I know, Brian, you were confused just by the title of it. This is in regards to a student in a high school in Baltimore City who only passed three classes in 4 years and yet still ranks towards the top half of his class with a 0.13 grade point average.
How?
Well, this is a situation apparently where the school system failed this young man. So apparently, let me find the kid's name here. They have his mom's name. I'm not seeing.
Use the mom's name. We're good with that.
So Tiffany France, her son, supposedly was a senior at Augusta Fells Savage Institute of Visual Arts in West Baltimore. Okay. Transcripts show that he's passed just three classes in 4 years, earning 2.5 credits, which technically means he's still in ninth grade. But she is saying she didn't know that until February. She thought that he was doing well because even though he failed most of his classes, he was still being promoted. His transcripts show that he failed Spanish 1 and Algebra 1, but was promoted to Spanish 2 and Algebra 2. He also failed English 2, but was passed on to English 3. So she was going under the assumption that, you know, if you're just going to the next grade, then you must be getting the credits.
Unbelievable.
In his first 3 years, he failed 22 classes and was late or absent 272 days. However, in those 3 years, only one teacher requested a parent conference, which never happened. So now, at the end of 4 years, he is being told at the age of 17 that he will need to go back to ninth grade and repeat high school again.
Yeah. Damn right.
So yes, so his they posted a picture of his report card again, showing his GPA at 0.1373, but his class rank is 62nd out of 120 kids. So that means that there are 58 students in this school that have less than a 0.1373 grade point average.
How is that fucking possible?
Well, local news talked to someone at the school that remained anonymous, but said, basically the school failed. There are a number of protocols and interventions in place to help students in situations like this, whether they're falling behind or they have low attendance. Apparently, none of those went into effect to help this kid out.
But did Rex go into effect?
It's very possible. I'm not 100% sure. We would have to get back to them on that.
All I want to do is zoom, 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 boom, boom, and a boom, boom, boom. Just shake your rump.
So at the very least, though, she has pulled her son out of Augusta Fells, and he is now enrolled in an accelerated school program and could, if he works hard, graduate by 2023.
Wow. That's fucked. That is
that is messed up. What else do we have,
Ron? Brian? Ron, can I congratulate you?
For what, Brian?
Your ability to pick NFL games is just absolutely amazing.
Wait, are you saying it's time for NFL locks of the week?
Yes.
All right.
Do we have a bumper or no?
We still have to. We didn't pay that bill, so we need to.
Got it. Ron, this is week one of the NFL 2021-22 season. Last week, we made our picks. Today, the games were played. Fortunately, we record this late on Sunday, so we do have the results. You went 2-0, my friend. I don't know if you realized this.
I wasn't really paying attention today.
On Thursday, Tampa Bay took on the Dallas Cowboys, laying 7.5. You said Tom Brady is great, but he's not that great. You said take the Cowboys and the points. Bucks only win by 2. So that was your first win of the week. Then in Kansas City, the Cleveland Browns took on the KC Chiefs, getting 6 points. You sat there and said the Browns, this is their year. Baker Mayfield, Moose, something. He's going to do well. Chiefs may win, but they certainly are not going to cover. Chiefs 33-29, only winning by 4. You, my friend, went 2-0 this week.
Well, and thank you. Thank you for these kind words. But I must also congratulate you, my friend, because you hot out of the gate also. You said, you know what, Ron? No one ever went broke betting against New York teams. So you took Denver -2.5 against the New York Giants. Not much of a game there. Broncos win 27-13. And you're like, you know what? I like the Rams, the LA Chargers going up against the team with no mascot, the Washington football team, LA -1.5. They win by 4, 20-16. So stellar start to the year for you too. Congrats.
I felt good. I felt good. I definitely felt good.
Do we have some picks this week for the fans out there?
I'm ready for my picks. Are you ready for yours?
I am ready for my picks.
Well, let's alternate one at a time. I'm going to go Buffalo -2.5 at the Dolphins.
That is a good pick. Even with the Dolphins' solid performance against the Patriots, you're going with that.
I do not believe the Dolphins are going to be able to do it 2 weeks in a row.
All right. I am taking – so New Orleans was a shocker with their big win against the Packers earlier. I'm taking New Orleans on the road -3 against the Carolina Packers. Carolina Panthers,
Smart call. In week one, Dallas Cowboys showed some heart covering against the Bucks. They will not cover in week two. I'm saying take the Chargers -3.
All right. And those Patriots, they may have lost earlier to the Dolphins, but again, you don't go broke betting against New York. I like New England coming in to play the Jets. New England's giving 3.5 points, taking that line all day long.
All day long.
All day long. So that's our NFL locks of the week. And we should probably, We had some passings this week, Brian, so we should probably talk about some of those who have left us. We've got some photos up here. First up, from Tiger King fame, zookeeper Eric Cowie, passing away at the young age of 52, found face down in a bed in an apartment on East 55th Street in Brooklyn, New York.
Do you like the shirt he's wearing?
Is that a Clutch shirt?
That is a Clutch shirt.
All
so
right.
in honor of Eric Cowie passing away, I went to go see Clutch yesterday.
Nice.
He died in New York, so I don't have to spend 9/11 in New York. Now, we all remember him. His big scene was going through the Walmart meet that Tiger Joe, what's that guy's name again?
Joe Exotic.
Joe Exotic brought back and had been expired from Walmart and they were throwing out. So the big episode that I remember with this guy in terms of the scenes was when he was excitedly going through the expired Walmart meat, setting aside the stuff that he and the other employees were going to eat as compared to what they were going to be feeding the animals.
And apparently he had a drinking problem. He had been pulled over for a DUI in Oklahoma, I believe it was, a few months back. He was staying in the apartment of a friend in New York City. Officials allegedly found a large bottle of vodka at the scene with his body.
Poor guy.
We will miss.
Rest in power. Rest in power, my king.
Great actor. This next one, kind of sad to see this person go. That's right. From Police Academy fame, Art Matrano. Also a stand-up comic, apparently. I did not realize that.
Nope. Did not know that about him.
So passing away at the age of 84, natural causes. I also forgot that he played Rico Mastorelli on Joni Loves Chachi.
I remember watching that show. I do not remember anything about it. It was a failed spinoff from Happy Days.
Yes. But he played
I always felt that Ralph Malph should have been given the spinoff opportunity and not Scott Baio, who we know now is just a nonsensical conservative.
Yes. Also, I did not realize this about him as well. On September 17th, 1989, he fell off a ladder while working on the roof of his L.A. home, landing on his head, fracturing his first, second, and seventh vertebrae, which left him a quadriplegic. But he made a remarkable recovery and turned it into a one-man stage show in which he would, at the end of it, emerge from his wheelchair to take a few steps.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
How's he doing now?
Well, he's passed away at the age of 84.
Right, right, right. I forgot the bit we were doing.
Celebrity yes, deaths. Yes, I understand.
Yeah. Now, he was the main foil in the second and third Police Academy movies, not the first one, correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
How many of those Police Academy movies did they make?
I think there was 7 or 8 by the time they were done.
By the way, Steve Guttenberg, SUNY Albany alumni.
That
you didn't know that.
True. And I think Michael Winslow was in all of the Police Academies. He was the guy that made all the noises with his mouth.
Michael Winslow, is he the guy that played Omar on The Wire?
He is not. That was actually Michael K. Williams. Also in our celebrity obituaries, passing away tragically at the age of 54. As you said,
best this known was sad.
Role as Omar Little on The Wire. He was also in Lovecraft Country on HBO. Most recent
Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire.
Remember Chalky White?
Yep. Yep. He was When They See Us. He was The Night Of, Bessie. Just a ton of great roles. Did they provide with a cause of death? I believe they felt it was probably an overdose, but I don't
they
know.
They were tipping their cap by saying that he was found with drug paraphernalia around him. There was no sign of break-ins or any foul play. I think they're trying to imply that this was a drug overdose. At the end of the day, regardless of the reason, he has passed away, and that is a shame. it will be all the more sad if it was because of an overdose.
Yes. And Billy is letting us know 7 total Police Academy movies. I think
that is about 4 too many.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How many movies can Michael Winslow be like? Doo, 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 doo,
doo. See, I can do that. But I tell you,
that
shit was funny. That shit was funny when it came out.
Oh, when it came out. Yeah, but you know what we should do?
What's that?
For our Patreon, and I'm not trying to, drag people to the Patreon. What we should do is, and I don't know if this is legal for copyright purposes, but can we watch a movie? Can we stream a movie? I have no problem taking away the entire audio of it, but have it play on one side of the screen while you and I provide commentary on the movie.
We'll have to look into that. There has to be a way to do that.
Because I think that would be a fun thing to do on Patreon. It's like Ron and Brian go to the movies, where we sit there and just we show an entire movie while basically, talking about the movie, people who were in it, what our thoughts were when watching it. You know what? I say you and I try it, and let's see. We'll test it out one weekend. But I think that would be a fun thing to do for our Patreon subscribers. Speaking of Patreon.
Yes. Coming up. Well, real quick, can we sneak in some more Police Academy trivia before we talk about the Patreon?
Because Bill would
also let us know George Gaines, Michael Winslow, and David Graff were the only actors appearing in all 7 films of the series. David Graff, of course, Sergeant Eugene Tackleberry, the guy that liked all the guns.
Tall guy.
And then George Gaines, I think, was the commander.
No.
Yeah, he played whatchamacallit. He was, I can't think of the name. The guy that was on Punky Brewster, he was.
David Graff. David Graff was the Dwight from Office.
And
it's the same character.
And Commandant Eric Lassard. That's who he played. All right. Giving us some info here. Watch alongs usually happen with the hosts instructing the listeners when to hit the play button. So we'll have to do a coordinated watch party.
But is that what we're doing? A coordinated watch party?
I don't know. We'll have to figure it out.
Because I remember we did a watch party for A Christmas Story, and hearing the 4 different versions at different times based on our internet subscribers, it was a nightmare.
Oh, Brian, forget the Patreon for a moment. We have almost forgotten of our hot new bits of the year. It's time for Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week.
Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week.
So Ron, I think I'm going to get you this week.
All right. Well, who is your Dead Anti-Vaxxer of the Week?
Can you please put up a photo of Lieutenant Stephen Shitey.
Yeah.
S-H-Y-T-I. He looks very good here. Little doughy. Maybe he's had a couple drinks. However, he's not alive anymore to defend himself, so there's nothing funny about this. You're looking right now at a photo of Lieutenant Stephen Shitey, who worked at Manhattan Criminal Court in New York City. He was a court officer for the past 26 years in the court system, was known to have a calm and reassuring presence in the Manhattan Criminal Court, was well-liked by all members of his command, and was known for his fairness and care with his co-workers. Unfortunately, Lieutenant Stephen Shitey was a strong anti-vaxxer. While he felt that he would not get the vaccine, told co-workers that he mistrusted the government and did not feel that this vaccine was going to help him in any way. He was willing to wear a mask, so he wasn't completely bad. Unfortunately, earlier this year, Lieutenant Shitey was diagnosed with COVID-19. Symptoms got worse. And earlier this week, he died in a New York City hospital after battling the virus for only 2 weeks.
Mm. Well, that is
top that bad boy.
All right. Well, perhaps I can. Let me pull up a picture of my choice for the week. This is Michael Lowe. You will see him there with his lovely family. That is his wife, Christina, and their two children, Michael and Christina, once adamantly opposed vaccines, face masks, and other precautions, calling the pandemic a, quote, political game. We thought the vaccine was rushed, Christina told local news. We thought it was more about money and power than about Americans and protecting the people. That, of course, until Michael, a 15-year-old firefighter living in Henderson, Nevada, fell ill with the coronavirus, eventually being hospitalized with pneumonia and kidney failure. It prompted his wife, Christina, to change her mind to get vaccinated. She got her first shot on August 29th, which is the same day that her 38-year-old husband died, leaving her alone to raise two young sons.
That is incredibly sad.
It is. It's sad and, shall we say, preventable.
We believe it's preventable.
Well, I mean, it would.
It's not. The vaccine is not a 100%, but had he gotten Moderna,
the gold standard,
he would have a 99% chance of being alive right now.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up here because we do have to go over to After Dark, as Brian was saying, talking about our Patreon, which you can sign up for at ronandbrianpodcast.com. Brian, tease us a little bit. Tickle our asses with the feather. Tell us what people can expect from After Dark tonight.
From After Dark tonight, we will be playing a game of involving Derek Jeter and his own personal Hall of Fame. Jeter, the captain number two, went into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York earlier this week. Almost a unanimous first round pick. But we wanted to celebrate Derek Jeter in a different way. That's going on today on the Patreon. We also have a couple other stories that we're going to hit. We've got some stories about Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor. I don't know how that ended up on Patreon. We also have our lovely Paul. Everybody loves Paul Pierce.
Yes.
My favorite basketball player. And then we also have a bishop in church who got into a little bit of trouble after becoming a erotica writer.
Number two, Derek Jeter.
The gold standard.
All right. Anything else before we cut out here and get ready for After Dark?
No, I think that's good. Listen, if you're not a member of our Patreon, you've just spent the past hour listening. If you liked what you heard, you would like to support us. A lot of people say, hey, Brian, let me give you some money. I don't want money. Some people said, let me give you a gift card. We don't want gift cards. What you can do is invest in the show. Monies that you are contributing on our Patreon, go to our website, click the link in the upper right-hand corner. You will be taken to patreon.com/Ron and Brian Podcast. It might be the Ron and Brian Podcast. I don't have the URL memorized, but it goes there. There are multiple levels you can join, as little as $5 a month, all the way up to $150. Each tier that is offered provides different benefits. In some cases, swag. In some cases, the ability to watch live streams of the show that we're doing. Content, we always try to set aside some of the spicier, salacious stuff. And it's good. It's a way for you, the viewer, the listener, to say, hey, how can I help out?
There you go. You know what? You were pretty good tonight, Brian. I didn't even have to use.
But this time's gotta stop.
Went the whole episode without it. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. For our Patreon subscribers, we will see you in about 16 minutes. For everyone else, we will see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian Podcast. We're live each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.